Joris.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's gone 5:30, so I'll declare our meeting open. Normally I would say welcome, but it's a little bit the reverse today, so I want to say thank you for welcoming us to Taylor's Arm Hall. Also a very special thank you to the ladies. The hospitality is always something special at Taylor's Arm Hall. It gets talked about back at council. We don't always get welcomed so nicely with lovely homemade food everywhere we go. So thank you very much to those ladies who, and any men who helped. I shouldn't be. And I can see from the ladies' smile that that was a redundant statement. But anyway, thank you to, I won't be sexist, thank you to everyone who assisted with providing the afternoon tea, which, by the way, is dinner for most of us as well, so thank you very much. I also need to commence our meeting by acknowledging the Gumbangia people, who are the traditional custodians of this land, and I pay respect to elders, past and present, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal people present. Thank you. Now, I also need to remind everyone that this meeting is being webcast, so speakers should refrain from making defamatory comments. And could I ask that if you have a mobile phone with you, that you turn it to silent, please? Okay, do we have a pastor for a prayer? Okay, we'll deal with apologies first.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this evening we have two apologies. Councillor Ricky Buchanan is on leave, and Councillor David Jones, an apology for this evening's meeting.
Thank you. And is the Reverend Gary White here?
Yes.
I'd like to invite Reverend White to come forward and lead us in prayer. And Reverend White is here on behalf of the Christian Ministers, the Nambucca Valley Christian Ministers Association.
Hello there. Take the mic here?
Yes.
That might be an idea.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and councillors. It's good to be here with you once again and to just share a little with you and opening a word of prayer. My name's Gary White. I've been here almost a year now, so I'm starting to feel a bit of a local towards the place, and just thank you for the opportunity to come out and pray for you. So let's pray together. Lord, we thank you for the wonderful Nambucca Valley, for the beautiful sunrises over the sand and sea each morning, the sunsets over the mountains out here to the west. We thank you, too, for the communities that reside in the valley. Lord, we do not take for granted the free and open society we enjoy on a daily basis. We recognise there are many communities the world over who do not enjoy the good things we have. Help us not to take them for granted. We pray too for this council. We thank you for giving us human government, for the ordering of our communities, that they work towards justice and truth, a fairness for all. We pray for Rhonda as mayor and Doug as deputy and for the other councillors. Give them wisdom to make decisions that make the community flourish. Where there are difficult decisions, where the choice is really only looking for the least worst decision, may they choose seriously and well. We pray for the staff who make the council work, for Chris and Matthew and Daniel, but the dozens of others who each do their part each day in a thousand different ways. Lord, may they be diligent in their work and persist in their desire to do what is right. And Father, we pray for our communities that we might be wise in our conduct of ourselves, that we might realise that it is not easy being part of the community in today, this day and age. We thank you for the work that is done at each one of these meetings. And so, Father, we just commit this meeting into your hands now and pray that good outcomes from it. We ask it in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Do we have any disclosures of interest?
Yes, Madam Mayor, this evening we have several disclosures of interest. The first one is from Councillor Susan Chenby in relation to item 10.2. That's the Barrowville request for donation for Community Development Association. We have a further funerary interest from Councillor Troy Vance in relation to item 11.2. The applicant is one of the clients of his employers. We also have a further disclosure of interest from Councillor Vance in relation to item 11.3. And that's for a personal approved construction certificate. In addition to that, I have declared Mr. General Manager a non-pecuniary less significant conflict of interest in relation to item 12.2, which is the Maxwell Memorial Aquatic Fitness Pool tender. So I'm actually just a paid up member there, I have a 3-month membership to continue there. And in relation to item 12.7, it's also the General Manager's performance agreement, so we will be leaving the council chambers for that item. It's a pecuniary interest. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, councillors. Confirmation of the minutes, please, from the ordinary meeting of the 23rd of February. Moved Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Are there any corrections to the minutes? None. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. The next item is a mayoral minute. But councillors, you will note as it refers to the general manager's performance agreement. Could I have a motion to defer consideration to close? Moved Councillor Vance, seconded Councillor Genevieve. Thank you. Any discussion? I should probably correct the wording of that to move the order of the item to be considered with the other items enclosed. It just means we don't have to ask everybody to go outside while we consider that item and then bring you back in. Okay, those in favour? Against? It's carried, so that item will be dealt with at the end of the meeting, which means we can go straight to our public forum. And we have 8 speakers who'd like to address council tonight. And the first is Raylene Daly. Raylene is the secretary of the Taylor's Arm Hall Committee of Management. So Raylene, here she is.
I'd like to welcome Mayor Ronald Bowden and his staff. Thank you for coming and for the chance for us to...
Raylene, sorry, could I ask you to come forward? Because we have to record our council meetings, I'm not sure you'll be picked up by the speaker.
Yes.
So I'll give you the microphone.
Do I have to use that? Okay. Yes. Okay. Welcome, Mayor Rhonda Hoban, councillors and staff. Thank you for the chance to address the council meeting and to thank the council for its support in maintaining our hall. We have our kitchen completed with stove and kitchen cupboards finished, a covered walkway, which is a great addition to the hall and a great asset for our disabled patrons to access our restrooms. The solar panels have been installed and we should reap the benefits shortly. We still have a wish list. We have a septic problem, but that we're looking forward to getting that all sorted. And our bird infestation problem is the only two things we have left. And the council's been very generous in its time and its patience in dealing with us. We don't let up easily, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Raylene. Raylene, before you go, could I ask, what's the issue with the bird infestation?
Well, they don't get in here anymore because we have a bird scarer that the council put in for us. But the front veranda, they nest and there's poop everywhere. Yes, they poop everywhere.
I'm sure that's one for Mr. Walsh too. Are you in charge of birds?
He can inspect that, yeah.
He's going to have a look on the way out. Thank you, Raylene. Our next speaker is Jeff Ainsworth, and Jeff would like to address council regarding flood markers and culvert repairs. Welcome, Jeff, and I'll give you the mic.
Good evening, welcome Madam Mayor and councillors, my name is Jeff Ainsworth. I've come with concern about the causeway at Sundowner Road, which is near Green Hills Road, some kilometres from here, where the water keeps going over the top, the pipe's not big enough, the causeway is actually slumped and cracked, and needs a bit of repair. I think I've slept in my car a few times and not get home. Even though you can go home up through all these bridges, can't get through there. And then, what else? There's no markers on it except today coming down. They put a marker on the causeway, but only one way. You can't read it the other side. That was only done a couple of days ago. And another concern is the markers on the bridges around here. There's none at O'Donnell's Bridge has got no markers. Young's Bridge has got no markers. The Factory Bridge has got one. Blavish Bridge, which is the one just here, has got none. That's the major one that floods more than any other bridge, I think, around here. And it's a bit of a concern for the community. Coming to my ground one day, I've had my car stuck in the causeway and ruined the car a few years ago as well. And I've been to council 6 years ago and they've never heard any more from them, so that's about it, I think. Well, I'd like to thank Rochelle McMurray for her talking with me a couple of weeks ago, and Steve Lloyd, which rang up me. And first time we had a call from council. And he spoke quite well too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ainsworth, and we'll pass your comments on to Rochelle and Steve. And Mr. Walsh has noted the flood markers and the work required on the causeway. So we'll get someone to have a look at that. I have a feeling that in the past we've had some flood markers put up and they've either been, dare I say, washed away in floods or perhaps removed, but we certainly need to make sure that for safety reasons that those are replaced. So Mr. Walsh will follow that up for you. Our next speaker is Vicky Provis, and Vicky would like to address council regarding the flying fox infestation at Tails Arm Village. Thank you, Vicky.
I just stand in front of that.
Yeah,
just I'm loud enough anyway.
Sure.
Okay, I'd like to raise awareness about flying foxes infestation in the village. The size of the colony has more than doubled this year, and they are camping in the camphor trees right at the back of all the houses up the road here. We can't drink the tank water because of their contamination. The smell is so bad, we do not go out in our backyards unless necessarily. We also, if you put wash on the line, sometimes you've got to re-wash it because of the droppings, and also on our cars as well. And you can't leave on the cars for too long because it starts eating the paint away. I'm just wondering if we can do something about it because they're in camp laurel trees, which are classified as a class 4 noxious weed. So if there's anything that can be done about removing the trees or something, because it is getting that bad. As I said, we can't handle the smell. The smell is shocking. It's absolutely shocking. So, and it's not just me that's complaining, it's anybody else in the village. So apparently I'm speaking on behalf of them as well. So, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky. I guess most people are aware that flying foxes are protected under both state and federal legislation. There may be something that can be done, though, the fact that their roosting area is camped for laurels, but I suspect it's only certain times of the year, but I'll ask Mr. Walsh to respond.
Are they on council land?
Yes.
Through the general manager, Madam Mayor, Councillor Kennedy. The removal of those trees can be done. Obviously, they're camphor laurels. The, as the Madam Mayor said, the bats are a protected species. We have a grant funding at the moment to do removal, the tree removal along that section. It is council land and some private property. But the issue is in terms of our licence, it has to be once they leave, which is generally during the cooler months. Last year they didn't leave during that period, which held us up. So hopefully this year they do move on, and then our guys will be able to get in there and do that tree removal, which will take it back. So if and when they do leave, definitely let council know straight away. Our guys still monitor it, but if, yeah, if somebody can be reminded as well, that would be the end.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh, and perhaps even, I don't know whether it's possible, but if local residents or nearby residents notice that the numbers are declining, maybe that's time to, as soon as you start to see that the numbers are declining, because that'll give us, we'll be able to monitor it then and be ready to go with tree removal as soon as, whereas, you know, if it takes a while and by the time we get organised and get tree loppers and engaged and in place, Murphy's Law, they'll be back. Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Mr. Greg Desmond. Mr. Desmond is speaking on behalf of the Taylor's Arms Sports Reserve. And he has the assistant.
No, they're going to hold all these papers.
Oh, okay. You're fine.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, councillors, general manager and staff. My name is Greg Desmond, Taylor's Arms Reserve Committee of Management Chairman. I have tabled a draft copy of the concept plan for our much treasured reserve. The reserve plan has been in preparation in council offices since November last year, after we had a community day here for further input. I've been promised by council staff that the plan will be reported to council next fortnight. As chairman and seeing council is in our beautiful part of the world again, I thought it important and appropriate to give council a heads up and a feeling of the plan's origins and significance to our community. The committee has had a number of ideas for projects at the reserve for many years. The importance of these ideas and the shortcomings of the reserve and its facilities were magnified in the fires of 2019-20. Like everything, it all comes back to funding. After the committee made an attempt to attract funding and failed, we were advised by councillors that we need a plan for our reserve to obtain appropriate funding for grants when they become available. With the help of Damien Lay from council, we sourced funding to develop a plan. We sat down with Gary Murray, the landscape architect and recommended by Damien, and the draft concept plan I have presented to you was conceived. Taylor's Arm Valley is a very unique area of the Nambucca Valley. It is significant that it is the largest catchment of the valley, and for some residents it is a 2-hour plus round trip depending on road conditions to visit Maxwell, let alone the coast. Because of the distance from the coast, Taylor's Arm area was relatively self-sufficient in the past. The townships were home to a general store, service station, butcher, bakery, cream factory, timber mills, blacksmiths, and of course the iconic pub. We had up to 4 public schools to the top end of the valley and many tennis courts and sporting areas dotted along the way up the river to service the community. And I should not forget to mention our beautiful halls, which are still well maintained by their management committees today. As we all know, things have to change or evolve. I would suggest in the last 40 odd years, our area has been very transient society with more people moving away than moving in. But now in the last 10 years or so, things have changed again. We see our villages filling up again, vacant blocks that have been vacant for many years have been taken up and built on, and our farms are becoming much smaller. With the introduction of internet, people are now working from home and more people seem very happy to stay. The management committee has approached and obtained letters of support for the concept plan from a number of current user groups, namely the Taylor's Arms Vietnam Veterans. We've been working closely with Stuart Johnson and his team from the start, considering the significance of the cenotaph and the memorial at the reserve. they also have two members on their management committee. We also have letters from the Medlow Public School and Medlow PNC Association. Sarah Lamb is principal and Danny Parkins, president of the PNC, are very excited about the plan and direction of the reserve. And it should be noted now that the school has grown 30 students. The Rural Fire Service also has a letter from them saying that the reserve played a significant role in assisting RFS and helicopters defending bushfires in the 1925s. The RFS strongly supports the concept plan to be put to council. I've also had verbal support from cricket user groups or tennis groups and also four-wheel drive enthusiasts. Due to the reserve proximity to one of the valley's most popular tourist attractions, namely the Pub No Beer, it is also frequented frequently by campers and various groups of campers. Plus, it also accommodates an overflow of campers for various pub functions. People also like to stay as well because of the reserve's proximity to national parks, state forests, and something I think that needs to be developed and promoted more in our valley. It also should be noted that these campers and visitors come here throughout the state, not just locally, plus Australia and sometimes overseas. The plan will also address some of the simple things in life to give our hard-working residents, people, young and old, sporty or not sporty, a choice to stay here rather than driving all the way back to the coast for recreation. To be able to take the grandparents for a walk in a wheelchair or ride a push bike on a flat surface, or simply just chill out at a barbie with family and friends and kids in the park. The committee and community of Taylor's Arms strongly believe that facilities at the reserve need to be seriously upgraded to reflect other well-facilitated camping, playground and reserve areas of the Nambucca, which is of the Nambucca Valley, with this beautiful Nambucca Valley. The residents here are very mindful of how much money has been spent in other areas of our valley since the bushfires. We would like to think it only fair to bring some of this money to the rural areas such as Taylor's Arms. To conclude, the plan for the reserve, which will be presented to Council, addresses a number of key issues raised in this presentation. It will make the reserve a much more multifunctional and multi-purpose facility. It will promote social cohesion, give our community hope and continued interest in the reserve well into the future. Future management committees will now have a direction and goals to achieve with the assistance of much needed outside funding. And most of all, the plan will build on an already beautiful ambience and presence at the reserve in our treasured Taylor's Arms Valley. Thank you in anticipation of Council's endorsement of the concept plan in the near future.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you to Mr. Argue for being the microphone stand. Very good job. Actually, it's great to see that this is actually completed. I do recall attending a meeting when the committee were working on this. I think Mr. Desmond hit the nail on the head. For a lot of grant funding opportunities, the first thing the funding bodies want is a plan. So I can't speak for the rest of the councillors, but I'm hoping that an endorsed plan is very close, and once it is, that can then be used for grant applications. And again, I know that it's a fairly comprehensive plan and there's a fair bit in it, but once you have a plan like this, it's sort of, sometimes you have to do it section by section, but even if that happens, it all fits together and eventually you will have something that's really special. And there are quite a few different grant opportunities that come up. So sometimes you won't be able to do part of your plan, but if it's a sporting thing, it might be improvement for the tennis court, or it might be disabled access and it might address pathways and toilets. So having that plan is really important. So I'd like to congratulate on behalf of Council the committee for actually doing the work to get this together. I know Damien helped, and Red Belly Design were utilised, but if local people don't actually have input, we just don't get anything. So I'm pleased to hear that this plan also has the support of all of those other organisations, because that's always an issue in trying to get a plan like this together, is getting that community agreement as well. So it looks like you've done a really good job on getting it to this point and getting that support. So I'm just hoping now that council will come to the party and return that confidence and support. Well, I can't promise it until these guys see it and vote on it. Anyway, we'll go to our next speaker, and that is Ms. Julie Gooch. And Julie, are you doing a double take, Mrs. Gooch? Well, I believe Mrs. Gooch is going to speak on behalf of the Roads Action Group, but rather than reintroduce her, she will then follow up speaking on behalf of, well, regarding the North Bank Road communication with council staff and council website. Because you may have on your agendas Ms. Jenny Mackay as the speaker, but Jenny's ill, so Julie's not getting a 10-minute speech longer than everyone else. She's actually speaking on behalf of two different organisations. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, councillors and staff. I'll start with the Road Action Group. The Road Action Group started in October last year when a group of residents were invited to council chambers for a presentation by consulting firm Morrison & Lowe. The consultants had been engaged by council to review services and the management of council's assets such as libraries and, in our case, roads. The frustration of substandard rural road maintenance and non-acknowledgement by council for issues raised by residents were expressed at that meeting. Participants at the meeting pooled their names together, and that became the Road Action Group, or RAG. As word had spread, the community and our membership has grown. We have presented at council meetings, had face-to-face meetings with the general manager and council staff. We have evaluated the recommendations from the consultants and given our views to council staff. At the council meeting on the 23rd of February, council provided their first responses to the Morrison Lowe recommendation. We are now waiting for council to write their report on what they are actually going to do and how they are going to improve or change things from this review. RAG has asked that we be consulted on this before it goes out on public exhibition. At the RAG inaugural meeting on the 6th of March, we collectively finalised our aims and objectives, and they are: our aim is to lobby Nambucca Valley Council on rural road asset management. The objectives are to ensure the community has safe and trafficable roads to access all properties, to ensure an improvement in rural road maintenance, including road surface, roadside vegetation, drains, culverts, and bridges, to improve communication between council and community, council's transparency and the community's involvement in decision making, to ensure there is no downgrading of rural road maintenance and classification of roads, and to establish a transparent process for examining council's rural road budgets and expenditures. If anyone would like to join the RAG group, they can email ragactiongroup@gmail.com. I'll have that if someone's interested. If any resident or landholder have any issues about the roads, in our case, Taylor Zahn, email or get someone else to email Matthew LeBrand at nambuccanewsouthwales.gov.au. Make sure to CC in the council, and also if you CC in the Road Action Group, we can follow up with that. In this way, there is a record kept. We want fairer distribution of road allocation for funds for road allocation of funds for rural roads, and better communication between council and ratepayers. We want to be involved in the decision making when it is about rural roads. Thank you. So this is the same, this is from me. I would like to talk about ratepayers' communication with council. I contacted a senior member of staff a week ago last Monday in relation to the condition of North Bank Road. When I explained the situation to him, he told me he had no idea the road was in such a bad state. The road was getting to the stage of being intrafficable. He indicated he would get someone to inspect the road and email me the results of that inspection. I still haven't heard from him. The road has had a rather bad patch job done. I'm talking potholes this deep and that big round. So people are driving off the road to drive around potholes. When I contacted other ratepayers in the area, I was told that several road users had already contacted council, one by email and others by phone. I and at least one other person sent photos to council prior to Christmas when council was applying for a round of grants for road repairs. There doesn't seem to be any communication getting through to senior staff, and if it is, it's not being followed up. One other observation is the fact that council's website would have to be the least user-friendly website I've ever used. I work for the Department of Education, which does not have a particularly easy website to use, but I simply can't find anything on the council's website. It's all well and good for staff to direct community members to the website, but if they can't find things, what is the point? I would also like to ask what is happening with Taylor's Arm Road at Congarini and also Red Hill and what locals call Saul's Leap. I was on the understanding that council had a grant to complete the Congarini section in front of Pedicans. I'm just wondering where we're up to with that.
Thank you, Julie. Mr. Walsh said he can respond to some of the questions you've raised. Anything else, we'll take on notice and we'll make sure you get a response.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Salt Berry dip has currently got the one-way, as you'd be well aware. It's in the process of design and then funding allocation. So we've got money in the upcoming budget to assist the existing funding we have for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will be a number of months off. And there's an item in the business paper tonight that refers to timing, so it should be most likely within at least 10 months. So it's going to be quite a way off. Taylor's Arm Road at Red Hill, it's been designed by Public Works at the moment, so there's design work going in there at the moment. As well as that funding that's coming from Transport for New South Wales under the Natural Disasters funding program. But yeah, timeframes I can't give you at the moment, but it's definitely on the agenda. North Bank Road, there's been patching work done on, and condition assessment done. From what I understand, that the road's been is now that pothole that you've referred to as a field, if that's correct. I'll ensure it gets looked at again to make sure it gets up to the next one. Oh, I'm sorry. It's part of the same design being done by Public Works at the moment. We've got a number of slips throughout the Shire that we've got Public Works doing all the time at the moment, doing design, geotechnical designs for, and then that will then be rolled into a big program.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. If I could add, we've got flood damage from back 2021, several floods. One of the issues that we have is that all up and down the coast there is flood damage. As most people are aware, we were declared a natural disaster area, which means we are eligible for natural disaster funding. But with that funding comes very strict parameters, guidelines and rules, which is why we have to have organisations like Public Works come do inspections, do designs. They then have to be costed, they then have to be approved by Transport for New South Wales, I believe. One of the biggest issues is the fact that that's got to happen all up and down the coast. So the time delays are frustrating. I know they're frustrating for the community. They're also frustrating for council staff, particularly in some cases we've got landslips that happened in the first lot of floods. You do all of your costing, start on all of your design work, you get another flood before they're even repaired, and you've got to go back and redo those designs because the slips are now different or even worse. I know it's frustrating. The other issue that we're finding is trying to get contractors is becoming increasingly difficult. There is just so much roadwork on. Obviously, we're not the only shire. The other thing that's complicated, it is, it's great. For 20 years, we've lobbied for additional funding for timber bridges and for rural roads, but there's been large grants in particular for timber bridges, but the state gave it all up and down the coast, so there are more timber bridges being replaced than have probably happened in the last 50 years. So again, getting supplies, materials and contractors where necessary is almost impossible, let alone getting designs done. And we're not a council that's sort of large enough to have a couple of design engineers and two or three surveyors, so we have to rely to a large degree on engaging consultants. So when they've got plenty of work on, they just basically tell us, yep, we can do it for you, but you're going to have to wait. So my one hope is that at least, I just worry that we get another wet weather event before we get the last lot patched. And the other positive that has happened, that after like the 20 years that I've been on council, we've lobbied over what we call betterment. Under natural disaster funding, if and Taylor's Arm Road along the river is a classic example. If a bit of the river, bit of the road drops into the river, you get disaster funding to build the road back out to where it was into the river. And some years ago, you'll all remember it, because it was something like 18 months, 2 years that you put up with traffic lights along the river. There were two slips there. $6 million was spent on that. Frankly, that used to, I can't say that, it used to irritate me, because we said to the state government, with that same $6 million, we could approach property owners and purchase frontage of land, move the entire section of road back and away from the river. Their response to that is no, that's what we call betterment. It's like for like, you've got to replace. It's like a bridge. If a bridge is washed out and we get disaster funding to replace it, they won't fund us to raise it a metre while we're at it. Now, if you're going to replace a bridge and you can see that when you do it, raising it by 1 metre, even if it's not going to make it completely flood-free, but if it's going to reduce the number of days that residents are isolated, that was called betterment. Well, now the state government have finally used some logic and they're accepting betterment. So that's been quite a bonus for us. As I said previously, it was like for like. If it was a bridge that flooded, you had to rebuild it as a bridge that flooded. But anyway, that's probably more just for information, but we will try to hopefully get ahead of some of those jobs. We've got like 3 years of flood damage, and I think the value of it, I think the first round was something like $56 million worth of road damage. That was just roads without bridges and landslips. So it's going to be a long haul bringing the Shire's roads back to any sort of decent standing. And I don't think, I live in a rural area on an unsealed road, and I don't think I need to tell any of you that the damage over the last couple of years is such that a lot of our roads are just beyond patching potholes. They really need a complete sub-base and a complete reconstruct. And we've just got kilometres and kilometres of roads that would fit that category. So we will do our very best, and we will do our very best to stretch what dollars we do get as far as we can. Okay, our next speaker is Mr. Gary Crug. Is Gary here? Yes. And Gary would like to address council regarding the red tape in the DA process for their greenhouses and graffiti on Taylor's Arm Street signage. Oh, sorry?
Natalie.
Natalie?
Yes.
So,
and Gary. Yeah.
I'm Gary.
So you're both going to...
Yes.
You're sharing the...
Yes.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council members and team and neighbours. Thank you for the time. So far there's been some fantastic community initiatives. It probably is a little selfish maybe, but we would like to speak on behalf of businesses within this area. And our topic is our greenhouses. The process, which I'm sure you're probably aware of, but just to highlight the fact that we've been 12 months in the process to move our business to the Shire. We were unable to actually fill in the application ourselves. We're quite educated and very knowledgeable, but we needed to employ an urban planner to actually complete your application. We needed to hire a site surveyor and a draftsman. So well over $10,000 to invest before we could even submit our application. That took probably 6 months to get that info, and we're 130 days now with our application in council. I would like to let you know that we've missed two seasons of our crops. We've suffered hail damage. We've suffered flooding since we've been here. With our greenhouses, we would have not have been worried yesterday with the hail, but now we have some concerns. We've also missed our crop planting season, so we have nothing now. Basically, that we would be harvesting in spring and summer, we have nothing now because we don't have our greenhouses. So I do understand the process, and I appreciate what we need to do to have it done correctly, but just wanted to highlight the effects that it has on local business. Now, we would probably, in the good times, be looking to employ maybe 6 or 10 people. We employed 3 people prior to, 4 people, beg your pardon, prior to the rain that came. We had a couple of crop failures because of all the rain, and we had no greenhouses to protect our crops. We're down to 1 team member at the moment because we have really no work. So it's disappointing. And we just wanted to highlight that maybe, I don't know what you guys can do, except maybe you could vouch for us. I don't know what pool you have with Water New South Wales and all that sort of stuff. And as we said, we understand it's a process, but jeepers, you know, it's very hard to make a living at the moment when we're waiting so long, a year in the process to actually do what we do. Yeah. I know that's a lot to think about. And can I apologise? My son got married, and we've had so much on that I have no written notes, but I'm happy to provide something in writing if you need anything later down the track. Gary?
So just to help you understand what we actually do, my commercial developers, the products that I grow need to be protected under a greenhouse. Outside crops are inefficient, it's too hard to control. So the greenhouses are extremely important to us. We actually just spoke to our agent today. One of the things I grow is sweet peas. I've been one of the best growers of sweet peas in New South Wales for many, many years. I can't grow my sweet peas. It's because I need to grow them in greenhouses. They need to be protected. We have to compete with so many imports. We need these things to do our business, but we can't do our own business. We've come in here, we've put in 20,000 trees, which is what environmentalists and the way the government wants things to be done with trees. We're green in Australia. But we still can't do our main line of business. So we're asking for some help.
Okay. I can say too that Daniel has been fantastic. Communications with Mel and Daniel have been great. I do harass you guys a bit, and you give me the next time frame, the next time frame, the next time frame. I guess we're just saying, can you put in a good word for us or something? We really need to, I don't think there would be many businesses in Taylor's Arm of this sort. I know that we are hoping to be one of the largest flower growers on the Mid-North Coast. We probably are with what we've put in. And maybe you could have a good word for us. That's about the greenhouses. And I also just wanted to say about graffiti, it's kind of one of my pet hates, but we are encouraging a number of people to come into our community through our business. And the one thing that they mention and I see is the sign that's got graffiti on it, and it just looks really crappy. I'm sorry, I'm allowed to say that. We're a farming community, we're horticulturalists, we're cattle farmers. Let's look like it, you know, not a sign that's got graffiti on. And so many people travel past that sign and then past our flower farm on the way on a bike ride or a car ride to have a cold drink and lunch at the pub every weekend. So, one for Taylor's arm, please. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. And I understand Mr. Walsh would like to make a little bit of comment on some of the issues with the actual planning processes.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, the General Manager. Unfortunately, I don't have good news. The issue that Spigs are referring to is a requirement for what I call general terms of approval from a state agency for a, can you hear me now? Sorry. An approval from a state agency to do works, and in this case, it's works within 40 metres of the water course. Unfortunately, our experience with the New South Wales Department of Planning and Water is that it can take quite a few months to get that referral back, which exceeds assessment time frames, any reasonable assessment time frame. We do, we do request follow-ups numerous occasions. It's not just yours that gets held up through this process. There's been a lot of recommendations made by council in the past through different submissions and through different departments that look at restructuring processes over the years to amalgamate certain approval agencies and put more exemptions in. That hasn't come to fruition, which that and what they like to say staff shortages in those areas result in heavy referral time frames. So your DA, unfortunately, currently is just waiting on that. If we had that referral back, it would have been out as soon as we got it. So as soon as we do, we'll definitely get that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. So you're telling us this is yet another DA that's sitting with a government agency. Unfortunately, as soon as a development application is required by legislation to be referred to a government agency, we don't get any choice. And I think Mr. Waltz was being very politically correct, but I'm going to say it. Frankly, anything that goes to government agencies is as slow as a wet week. Crown Lands, Rural Fire Service, I can name half a dozen, it's all the same. I've seen development applications where our staff are ready to grant a consent, but they need a concurrence from Rural Fire Service, for example. Could be 6 months. Mind you, I hear that Rural Fire Service in recent months have significantly improved. The trouble is, though, it's the council people lodge their development application with, so it's the council they think are holding things up. As far as our actual planning department at council, we have one of the best turnaround times for development applications anywhere in the state, and that's up against big councils that have got 20 senior town planners. So it's very frustrating to hear that a local business that wants to employ people is being held up by a government agency. And this was the first I was aware of this being an issue with an agency. I'm quite happy if you want to email me or give me a call. It might make no difference, but I'm happy to make some representations via the local member and the minister. And do the, you know, we're a small community, low socioeconomic area. We've been hit by bushfires, floods, you name it. We have businesses trying to, you know, get established, employ people, and our communities get back, you know, on a good footing and back on a positive economic path. And we have hold ups like this, so I can I'm pretty good at rattling cages after 20 years practice. I'm happy to do that. As I said, I can't guarantee it'll help, but by the sound of it, it's not going to do any harm. So if you'd like to contact me and give me a bit more detail, I'm happy to. They'll all tell me that it's caretaker time at the moment, and they, yeah. So that's what we, yeah. But it won't be caretaker mode for very long, so we'll sort that out. So thank you. Our next speaker is Mr. John Vassallo, and he would like to speak about roads and speed limits.
Did you say before that this was on a podcast or something?
It's been recorded.
It's been recorded. What, just word recording?
Yes.
No, visual recording?
No, it's audio.
Yeah, just audio.
Does this work?
Yeah.
Do I have to press a button or something?
No, just hold it up close to your mouth and away we go.
Well, thank you for coming out to Taylor's Arm. Thank you. Evening, voters. Bye. Well, yeah, just with the local roads, I've been hearing that a lot of our smaller gravel roads are being downgraded so they don't get graded at all. And I'm just wondering where the end of that is. You know, like at the moment I've heard Sheetabark isn't going to be graded, Higginbotham isn't going to be graded. I'm just wondering where that's going to end.
Do you want an answer to that?
Do you want to answer me now, or do you want to...
Oh, well, have you got other questions?
No, that's all. Yeah. So I'm just wondering whether next it's going to be Green Hills Road or Cullers Arm Road or Castle Road. I'm just wondering where this is going to end, where they get downgraded so that you don't need to maintain them. Mm-hmm. I understand councils don't have unlimited budgets. Yeah. The other thing is the speed limits. You would have noticed coming out from Maxwell the last couple of weeks, this today and last month, there's 8 kilometre an hour zone from Maxwell, which I think is fair enough, given the road there. You go out of Taylor's Arm up here, and it goes to 100. The road narrows, you lose the centre line, and I don't see the understanding in that, you know, that a smaller, less maintained road has a higher speed limit. And on Green Hills Road, and you've only just recently finished upgrading Roy Gallagher's Bridge, which is great, but on Green Hills Road there, when you come off the factory bridge, which is the 50 zone, you come up the hill, come up to the rise there, and suddenly it goes to 100 on a dirt road that is pretty much a little bit car and a half wide. And there was a fatality on that road. And I think that the high speed limit may have contributed to that. People come off the bridge, they go 100 zone, oh, right, give them plenty of throttle. And I understand that it's a generational thing. People of my generation probably don't drive that fast, but red P-platers drive faster than green P-platers. Simple as that. So that's all. Thank you.
Before you go, forgive my ignorance, but so just beyond, it's actually signposted 100, is it? Or is it a de-restricted sign?
No, it's signposted at 100.
Okay.
You've only got to go up the road in 3 kilometres.
Yep.
Baker's Creek Road, which we had to use while they were rebuilding Royal Labrador's Bridge, when you go on to Baker's Creek Road at the top of the hill up there, it says, because you're coming out of an 80 zone, it says end of 80 zone, drive to conditions with no speed limit, which is probably a little bit better.
Well, I think
but more of an accurate way to describe the condition of the road.
Yeah, my understanding is that the law is, even if it's posted at 100 or 80, 60, whatever, the first rule is that you drive to the conditions, and the police can, I've been told, can actually fine you for doing 95 in a 100 zone if the road conditions are such, you know, if it's pouring rain or...
And that's what I meant by a generational thing.
Yeah.
Right. People of my generation and probably, you know, like in their 50s or so, you know, they drive to conditions, they drive slow. But if you're on your P-plates, you want to drive to the speed limit.
Well, so. I would agree that given the condition of those roads, considering that their wider tar seal is 80, that having it 100 beyond, I know what the road's like beyond Pales Arm, but my understanding is to change that speed limit, I believe we need the consent of Transport for New South Wales. So it would be a matter that we need to put to the Traffic Committee, which we can do. So Mr. Walsh will arrange for that. The Traffic Committee is not actually a committee of council. We have our a representative of our engineering department on it, the rest of police and RMS. And speed zones are set by Transport for New South Wales, not by the council. So we can't as a council decide that we'd like to make that a 60 zone. We just get the job of putting the signs up, but Transport for New South Wales have to approve and decide on the speed zone.
But you do make representations to that
body? Yes, we can take, and obviously there's a very good argument for it. We would take that argument to the Traffic Committee and request an approval to reduce the speed limit from 100 down to 80. It might go to less than 80, depending, once they do an inspection. And
I did hear that with a spate of fatalities on rural roads lately, that they are looking into lowering the speed limits.
My understanding is that Transport for New South Wales have like a formula, and they'll look at a road and they take into account how many driveways, the travel surface, site distance, number of bends and so forth, and then they determine, with all of those things, then they determine what is the maximum suitable speed for that particular road.
Okay.
So we can do that. In terms of your query about roads and being this business of road classification and what gets graded and what doesn't, what's being referred to is the 2009 roads hierarchy, which is a very old document that looked good on paper, and it was supposed to set out how often roads are graded, and roads were classified 1 to 5, and if you were like a major road, it might have been graded 3 times a year. And so, to be very blunt, it was never ever adhered to. It's not worth the paper it was written on. And the previous speaker, Mrs. Booch, when she was speaking on behalf of the Roads Action Group, referred to the Morrison Low report. To date, the Morrison Lowe report has made overarching recommendations. What we haven't had come back, and I think this is the thing that the community needs to keep an eye on and should be taking an interest in, is the asset management plans and the service levels attached to them. At this stage, that has to come to the elected council for adoption. At this stage, the elected council has not made any decision to reduce service levels on any roads, Higginbotham or anything else. What we are waiting for is further information to come back to the elected council, and obviously when that information's back, and that's what Mrs. Gooch was saying, that the Roads Action Group would like to see as well, because obviously there should be, it was stated at the previous council meeting, there will be opportunity for the community to see what's proposed, to have input into it, and then it will be up to the elected councillors. Obviously, I mean, you said yourself, funding is an issue, but having said that, again, I can't speak for all councillors, but my personal view is that every resident should have a safe and trafficable road. Not necessarily a two-lane highway, but safe and trafficable. Hopefully, the recommendations that come back out of those asset management plans will cover that. And if it transpires that we aren't able to fund that, then we have to do whatever's necessary to get to the point that we can fund it and provide that to every resident in the Shire. Did you want to make any comment on the...
No,
Any of those matters? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Will not be maintained any longer. It is a council road. There is a one of those posts with the red top on. White gate. My complaint in the road wasn't graded. I was told that that was not a council. The council would have no longer graded that road. That's only 12 months ago since I got that letter.
Okay, I'd like to.
I'll send it to you.
If you could forward me a copy of that, because if it's a council-owned road, my understanding is we're responsible for its maintenance.
It's been maintained for 60 years of my
number. Why not? So I live on one of those Category 5 roads too, that don't exist. Okay. I'll withdraw that. I shouldn't make personal comment. That's the last of our speakers. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time and trouble to actually come along. It's I know it's hard for local residents to get all the way to the council chambers. It is a long drive, and it's good for us to be able to actually come out here. And it's actually, I might get into trouble for saying this, but it's actually pleasantly surprising to come out to Taylor's Arm and have more people come along and be in the public gallery than what we get at Maxwell or when we hold our council meetings at our other towns when we have what we call an away meeting. So thank you for taking the time and trouble to come along and taking the interest. Everyone is more than welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but obviously you don't have to, so I'm sure some of you may have dinner waiting at home or children. Thank you. And I'll openly admit, when we go out to places like Burrapine Hall or out to Missabody, you know, for a lot of us that, you know, those councillors who live closer into town or in town, you don't have cause on a daily basis to drive these roads, so it doesn't hurt to get councillors out and see the actual roads, bridges and conditions out in rural areas, so it's a good opportunity from that perspective as well. So again, thank you for making us welcome, and as I said, you're welcome to stay for the rest of our meeting. So councillors, we'll now go, there's a question with notice, but you also have the written response, which has been provided by staff. There are no questions for closed meeting where due notice has been received. So we will go straight to page 23, item 9.1, outstanding actions and reports.
Councillor Angel, outstanding actions and reports, item 9.1, seconded Councillor Wilson. Is there any discussion? Councillor Jendall.
A question to you, Madam Mayor, to the General Manager or staff. It's about number 17, the free camping at Barrable on page 23. It says here that we know the Chamber of Commerce. I spoke with the president the other day, and he's actually got some footage somebody sent him of a young woman being attacked in Barrable. Down the river near where the pub complex is. And we just know from locals and local knowledge that there is some antisocial behaviour that sometimes goes on in Barrable. And I know the committee really wants a free camping up front where you could be a single woman in a camper van and feel there was enough exposure, but you know, in a spot like the committee is very keen to have free camping.
It says that the land bridge is
inappropriate because the land size is too small and a flood area. And that they recommend they meet with the hub group for, I couldn't understand, since the sports oval, there's a car park, old amenities at the end of the sports oval. Are they talking about the football shelters or the rec club?
So your question is?
Well, some clarification on where the Manager of Economic Development is recommending the free camping to go, and also it would seem not be nice to have the free camping on the river. Is there more that can be done in this space? I mean, the Chamber has not quite given up on having a camping spot down near Lake Cripson.
Given the complexity of your question, I suspect, can you make a comment on it? Mr. Lowe's obviously.
Clarify first where the hub group are talking about camping.
Mr. Walsh has indicated, with the General Manager's consent, that he might be able to respond to some of your question.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Genevieve. The discussion that I had with the Manager of Economic Development was about the feasibility of constructing a campsite on that side of the river, as well as the approvals needed to do it. At the moment, our free camping the technicality of a road or road-related area. If we were to construct a site-specific for camping, it would be hard to justify on that. It would be it's constructed for camping, so you'd need approval under the local government to operate a campground, similar to the primitive campground that's here in Taylor's Arm. With that comes primitive camping, there's a cap on the number of sites per hectare. Off the top of my head, I think the size of that site are maybe about one or two sites. As well as that, if you went to a traditional caravan park or campground, you'd need to put up all the necessary infrastructure, which would make it unviable in terms of service provisions, not just a primitive setup. So the discussion we had was more, it's a lot of work to go in there, not only that it's flood prone, so is that ideal versus putting a setup on the road related area, being the facilities up at the hub where there's an existing car park, road access, and toilet facilities. That from there, I assume that's where Mr. Lowe's then recommending a meeting to discuss those of that alternative.
So it is at the hub around the basketball court or something?
Up at the sports field where the change rooms are and the car park is near the football field.
Oh, that car park there?
Yeah.
Where the basketball court is. I mean, that is the thing that locals are saying, that is out of sight at night from largely residents in the town, and it sort of attracts maybe younger people down there a bit, I don't know, but that's what they're saying, that they want more somewhere that's not there.
That's perhaps a conversation that you might want to be part of, but to have with the Chamber and with staff. It's not really speaking to the motion of adopting this particular report.
I wanted clarity on where it was.
And Mr. Walsh has provided that clarity. Yes, there's not a resolution on the floor about the location. It's fine, seeing as it's an item as part of this report, for you to seek clarity. But in terms of anything beyond that, it's not appropriate to debate it at the moment under this item in the meeting. But it is something that you could either do through Mr. Walsh and Mr. Lowe, and perhaps you know, even organise a meeting in the council with interested parties. Or the other possibility is seeking a report or whatever so on that specific item so that it can be debated on its merits at another council meeting via a notice of motion. Is there any other discussion on this particular item? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 25, item 10.1. Moved Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Jenby. It's open for discussion. Councillor Jenby.
Just a couple of questions for the Assistant Director of Engineering Services, so for the General Manager. Just why are we getting rid of the variable message boards and the leasing of the hire vehicles at $1,900 each? Is that 23,000 almost per year? There's on the end of it. So it's we're retaining some vehicles and we're going to cease using hire vehicles. I just wondered how many years have we been leasing? And I have some information about the leasing fleet and the vehicles.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jenby, I'd have to take that on notice unless there's a I'll take that on notice, I'll get something back here.
What about the variable message board that says dispose?
Again, take on notice and yes, I'd be curious to know similar to Councillor Jenby's question, how long have we been, I've never seen anything in the council budget, particularly in the plant budget, relating to hiring of vehicles, especially at that sort of money per month. The other query I have is, and again, I don't expect an answer here, but perhaps it should be taken on notice. These proposals to retain vehicles that were in our original budget for replacement, presumably that's going to impact on our budget. Will the budget for the plant committee be adjusted at the next budget review? It just seems that we set a plant budget for the commencement of a financial year and then we're not actually abiding by it in terms of when items of plant need to be replaced or retaining things that previously were to be disposed of. And I think councillors are aware that our plant budget is a very large budget. We spend a lot of money on various plant items. So if there's any other queries on this? None? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 28, item 10.2.
Where should I go to?
You're required to go where you're out of hearing and out of visual sight. Sorry, that's the rule. Okay, item 10.2. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson, any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Someone like to call Councillor Jenby back? Page 31, item 10.3, councillors. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Martin Ballengarry. We'll just wait for Councillor Jenby. Okay. Okay. Item 10.3 has been moved and seconded. Actually, I have a question on that one. Why are we going back to Valla Beach again for an away meeting and not Vallawool? Can anyone answer that? It's just it's a long time since we went to Vallawool, and we haven't been to Valla Beach since. I would have thought it was Vallawool's turn again.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, has decided in the winter months to bring the meetings closer to the coastline, but there's no reason why we couldn't change it to Vallawool.
Oh, for goodness sake, we're not that precious. I think it's more important to make sure that our rural residents get an opportunity to address council than it is for everyone to be comfortable. Besides, I can assure you it can be pretty darn cold in the Valla Beach hall just as well. Actually, if anything, Valla Rural Hall has nice heaters and everything, probably better than the Valla Beach one.
Madam Mayor, I've just been informed that we haven't contacted anyone there on Valla Beach about that meeting yet, so we can change it to Valla Rural.
Okay. Well, I just think
yes, I'll move an amendment that the meeting scheduled for Valla Beach be transferred to Valla Rural Hall on the basis that there's been a previous and more recent meeting held at Valla Beach, and it's quite some years since we held a meeting at Valla Rural. If I can get a seconder for the amendment, seconded Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Any discussion on the amendment? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Obviously, the next one after that would go back to Valla Beach, but I think the last one was back when we had the concerns over mining leases. It's quite a few years ago, yeah. And I was just going to say we had a good turn up. We had about 400 people turn up from memory. Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of people in that Mitchell's Road catchment that, and Sullivan's Road and the back end of East West Road that probably have more of a connection to the Valla Rural Hall. Okay, so that's become a motion. If there's no further discussion on the motion, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 32, item 10.4. Moved, Councillor Jenby. Seconded, Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against, it's carried. Page 34, item 10.5. Moved, Councillor Vance. Seconded, Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against, it's carried. Page 36, item 10.6. Moved, Councillor Vance. Seconded, Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 38, item 10.7. Moved, Councillor Vance. Seconded, Councillor Angel. It's open for discussion. Does anybody else have any queries on this? Because I have a couple of questions. No one else? If I may, to the General Manager, this actually concerns me a little bit because... So is this the GIS process? It's, you know, GIS mapping?
Yes.
So we're putting our GIS map work and updating it, as well as our asset management and our asset management plans, all out to consultants, and this year we're funding it via staff vacancies. What's going to happen next year? We won't necessarily have the staff vacancies, and to be frank, I'm a little bit concerned about particularly asset management. It's a key to everything else that we do, and if our asset management details, you know, the condition of roads, bridges, buildings, they're the core of everything else. Having that put out to consultants concerns me, and I'm worried about how it's going to be. Like, are we going to get someone, a consultant, to do asset management plans, stick them on the shelf? To me, asset management should always be a living document that as assets are maintained or replaced or whatever, you have to keep updating all of your asset information. So I'm a bit concerned about how it's going to be funded in the future, and I'm also concerned about putting it out to consultants on a permanent basis.
Let's give Mr. Sides first response.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, this is to clarify the funding in regards to the report that went to Council on the 15th of December for the org structure. The GIS office in the assets section no longer existed under that adopted structure. So the proposal in the 23-24 budget is to fund the equivalent of that position, which I think is about 120,000 from memory. So that's in the proposed budget. The funding here is taking into account the termination of the employee that was in the that in that position previously by using those staff savings.
Is that going to be a permanent availability? Because this somewhere here it said by staff vacancies. Well, the vacancy suggests to me that the position's there, but it's vacant. This is just poor wording.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, it is a permanent funding. That's 71,500 that's in there. It's just for the 22-23 year. The 23-24 year, we're saying it's funded through that position no longer existing. So if that position was still in the structure, the GIS officer assets would be equivalent to 120,000, and that's what we're proposing in the draft 23-24 budget.
Okay, so it's not really being funded by staff vacancies?
Not in future years.
Yes. So the reason why we had to move to consultants initially is to fund that gap and get someone in to do the role and get the GIS up to a certain standard and a certain level, and then we have the asset managers take over from there and a dedicated GIS officer that sits within the IT section. So this is really, really about funding the catch up, and that's why that position is made or deleted in the reorg structure.
Okay, so consultants are doing the catch-up, and we're quite confident that with our existing staff we can maintain good quality asset registers and GIS information without increasing staffing levels.
Yep, so this is part of a bigger picture that we're undertaking some more ground truthing of all of our assets, and not least which is the road condition assessments that we're undertaking at the moment. So we're trying to utilise all the latest IT and the latest equipment that's available for us to get a real handle on the condition of our assets, because we know, certainly since I've been here in the last 12 months, assets in asset management has been a real trigger for most of the council in terms of formulating our future budget. So when you get on top of it, we need the accurate information. The GIS will plot where the assets are, both above the ground and below the ground. And the surveys that we're undertaking now on the roads will give us a much better condition of the current state of the roads. So we're hoping that all of those things will then inform asset management plans, which will then inform our future budgets, and particularly our long-term financial plan.
Could I ask then a further supplementary question? I just struggle to comprehend or to understand why we're in this situation and we have such poor knowledge that we need to go and get specialist consultants. I mean, 10 years ago we had no asset management staff. Over the previous years we had 3 or 4 staff dedicated to asset management. On top of that, for example, we employed, I think we spent $135,000 on specialist consultant engineers to do bridge inspection reports. They did one half of the bridges in, I think, 2018, the other half in 2020. We then had, we had SERAP going around doing all of the inspections on roads and assets. We've had building inspections done. So why is our asset information so unreliable in spite of having all of those extra staff and all of that extra work done that we just didn't have previously? I just struggle to comprehend why we don't already, where is the information and what's wrong with the information that those people did? We had that Mr. Montgomery, I think was a Montgomery, the civil engineer, and then we had John Henbury do the other half of all of our bridges. And these weren't what they call, I know they have different categories of inspections. You know, one was just a basic look and see, but there were full inspections done on those bridges where they actually did a report on every component of the bridge, down to capwales, abutments, piers, decking. And yet we're going out to consultants to do all this asset work. What are they going to do that's any different to what the assets management staff have been doing for the last 10 years?
If anyone can explain that to you, I'm not sure anyone can.
Well, I think I won't go back in time and talk about staff culture or anything else that's happened, but suffice to say that we've taken steps to progress forward, and you mentioned earlier that the asset management plan should be living documented and updated annually at least, and that's what we're working on. It's been unfortunate that there has been quite a long gap in accurate asset management plans. We're trying to rectify that through the use of both consultants and internal staff.
I guess one of the things that I'm trying to pinpoint is what went wrong so that we can ensure that it doesn't continue to go wrong. I mean, it might be something, I don't know, in the way that information is then stored and shared and used, or it might be in the way it's collected. So whether it's done by our own staff or consultants, if we can identify what has not been best practice in what we've done in the past, then perhaps we can make sure that what we spend money on into the future is actually a benefit, because for all the staff and expense, we don't seem to have any better handle on asset management now than what we did certainly 3 or 4 years ago, and absolutely 10 years ago. All right, does anyone else have any questions on this item? If not, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. We've got a late report, page 2, item 10.8 on your late paper report. That's the minutes. Oops. Here somewhere. This is the Telstra small cell tower at Burrapine. You should have a paper late agenda, and it's page 2, item 10.8. Moved, Councillor Angel. Seconded, Councillor Jenby. Any discussion? Councillor Jenby.
I just think the need to have really good communications overrides a lot of things. We're pretty experienced now putting up these towers around the place as far as EMF vibrations, but transmissions and the public, so. It's pretty well positioned where we looked. Is the hall going to lose any amenities by looking at a tower out on the western side? Sorry, that was a question.
Councillors, I think you'll recall when we were actually up at Burrapine Hall, we were taken around the side and shown where it was. I believe most of the hall committee were actually there that afternoon, and Mr. Moulds has consulted directly with them. I think they're more concerned about having good telecommunications and good connectivity than any sort of visual impact. And from what I can see, and I think from what councillors could see, there's not any house in close proximity. And I understand from the report and previous advice from staff that we received that adjoining properties were notified. So I think other than some concern raised about the possibility of EMFs, beyond that, I'm not aware that, but certainly the hall committee were very keen to have the tower. They've been waiting for something, because up until now, they've had no mobile phone reception. There were no objections actually raised to the location. Was it to the location though, or was it in relation to the... Sorry, I read one in relation to electromagnetic radiation, so... sorry, the general manager said there were no... that there is. Yes, it's about the location. And it was, can the tower be installed on the western side of the hall? I think the key issue is location in terms of connectivity and coverage. If I may, Mr. Walsh said, through the general manager, Mr. Walsh has indicated that he can give us some more information.
Through the general manager, Madam Mayor, the submission received, we did talk about EMF, but there was also a submission about the visual impact and requesting a go on the western side of the hall. The reasoning why that's been supported by Mr. Moles is there's service issues on the other side, and the size of the tower we're talking about is no real different to the height of the power pole that's nearby, so from a distance closest to residence, so that 200 metres away. So it wasn't being a significant visual impact.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. So, if there's no other discussion, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. We now go to page 41, item 11.1. Move to Councillor Jenby. Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? This is one that's been to Council a number of times. It's a planning matter, so those in favour, please stand. Thank you. That's easy. That's a unanimous vote. So there being none against, I'll declare it carried. Page 44, item 11.2. Councillor Vance is leaving the hall. I was going to say the chamber. But... move to Councillor Jenby. I'll come back to you as soon as you get a seconder. Seconded Councillor Wilson. Councillor Jenby, your question.
Through the General Manager to the Director of Engineering with his other planning hat on, please. 57 High Street, so the Borough RSL come in. Are we able to know a little bit about what the addition is? Or is it just kitchen, extension to the kitchen?
Through the General Manager, Councillor Denby, it's an addition to the floor area for the club. It's done, there is a grant funding that I understand they've received for the works for the evacuation centre. But generally it's just an increased floor area and deck arrangement. They had a previous DA approved a year or two ago, and they're basically surrendering that one and proceeding with this one to enable greater floor area. Most likely the criteria was for greater numbers during the event of emergency.
Thank you. If there's no other discussion, I'm going to put it. Those in favour, against, it's carried. Could we have Councillor Vance return, please? Page 48, item 11.3.
Sorry, did you say? It was an insignificant, was it? Okay, do I have a mover and second?
Yes.
Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 49, item 11.4. Moved Councillor Vance, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 50, item 11.5. Could I just ask how important this one is to be dealt with this evening? If I may.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, the importance is relatively high in that the Act will be amended from the 3rd of April, so any application received that the Council has an interest in, we must have a policy before we determine it. It could be deferred, but it just means if we were to receive, I don't know of any on the horizon, we just wouldn't be able to just delay the determination.
Thank you. It's just that it's a fairly complex one, and I would have personally preferred more time to consider all of the possible scenarios and implications. But given Mr. Walsh's advice, if someone would like to move and second. Move Councillor Gemby, seconded Councillor Angie. I shouldn't be speaking to it until I've got a mover and seconded. I guess we can always change the policy later based on Mr. Walsh's advice. I'm not going to move or defer it because that's what I mean. We can always review the policy, but by the sound of it, it's important we have a policy in place in case we receive something. If there's no other discussion on this, I'll put it. It's a planning matter. Again, those in favour, please stand. Thank you. Again, there being none against, I'll declare it carried. No late reports from engineering. So could I have a motion to go to closed meeting? Moved Councillor Martin Ballengarry, seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. So we now need to proceed to close meeting and ask
the recording's back on. Councillors, we're back in open meeting. I'll ask the General Manager to read the resolutions made in closed. No, we should have kicked off. Lorraine said that would be good. If you want,
that's what you do, Councillor Martin.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So in relation to confidential item 12.1, TWA7/2022, tender for upgrading the Mbucca Valley water supply lime dosing system, the Council resolved to accept the tender submitted by FSI Engineering Pty Ltd for the amount of $406,935 plus GST to complete the work for the upgrade of the lime dosing system. In relation to item 12.2, SF33201, Maxwell Memorial Aquatic and Fitness Centre pool tender, T015/2022, Council resolved to Community Aquatics be awarded as the successful tender for the operations and management of the Maxwell Memorial Aquatic and Fitness Centre for $1,665,000 inclusive GST for a 5-year term. 12.2, Council endorsed the tender evaluation as provided for tender T015/2022, operation and management of Maxwell Memorial Aquatic and Fitness Centre. And 12.3, update to be made to the contract register. In relation to item, confidential item 12.3, SF3301160323, regeneration management tender. Council resolved to accept all tender submissions received from the following to undertake bush regeneration management works for council from 1st of March 2023 to 28th of February 2026. Invite Environmental Forte Group, PTY LTD, Happy Valley Landscapes and Concrete, MA Laverty, Tom Burke, Guardian Land Services. In relation to item 12.4, SF3301160323, purchase of portable traffic lights. Council involved a quotation from Data Science Australia for the supply and or purchase of portable traffic lights, brackets, front and rear closed brackets, for the sum of $25,590, excluding GST, and the quote for 20 water filled barriers from Ingalls Civil Products for the sum of $21,000, excluding GST, be accepted in the items charged to Council's plant fund budget, subject to a favourable total cost comparison for utilising plastic barriers as opposed to concrete barriers. In relation to confidential item 12.5160323, matters regarding realised or potential losses, Council resolved the information concerning incidents where there is a realised or potential loss of funds and or reputation being received. In relation to item 12.6, SF3301160323, senior staff appointment, Director of Engineering Services. Council resolved that Council note the appointment of the successful candidate, in brackets as identified in confidential session, close brackets, as Director of Engineering Services in accordance with the standard contract of employment for senior staff for a fixed term of 5 years, commencing 27th of March 2023. In addition to that, the Council formally expressed its gratitude to Mr. Walsh in the way he stepped into the role and managed to keep the planning department and the engineering department functioning through changing times. In relation to confidential item 12.7, SF3301160323, Merrill Minute, General Manager's Performance Agreement. Council resolved that Council note the Merrill Minute and support priorities outlined in the report will include in the General Manager's Performance Agreement for 22/23. 12.2, Council congratulate the General Manager on his positive introduction to the organisation and community, and encourage his personal attention to the priorities listed in the performance agreement.
Thank you to the General Manager and councillors. There being no further business, I'll thank everyone for their attendance, their courtesy and patience, and declare the meeting closed.
Thank you.